So, and you kind of, I mean, you deal with this a lot in your book. So what you've just outlined there is kind of two separate, different approaches to how we try to deal with the issue of, you know, evil, God and evil. And the defense approach, which, as you mentioned, is kind of a just a soft way, apparently, to deal right. with it, has to do with, usually when we think about that, we're thinking about the free will defense. And yes. you kind of take issue with that particular approach in your book. So could you kind of explain for us, you know, how you capture the free will defense and maybe a couple of issues that you have with that particular? And I know we're kind of jumping off really quickly here into some.
Yeah, so there's really two basic ways that historically Christians have addressed the problem of evil, either in terms of a defense or a theodicy. And the most common response is called the free will defense. And then the other approach is generally known as the greater good defense. And of course, my theodicy, as you may guess, is a variation of the greater good theodicy or defense, and I call my theodicy the greater glory theodicy for reasons I can explain later. But anyway, the free will defense is the most common defense, and it is based on the assumption that a particular definition of free will is self-apparent or true. And so in philosophical and theological circles, this particular brand of free will is called libertarian free will. It's not the political philosophy, but it's the idea that nothing decisively or sufficiently can determine what choices we make. And so we are autonomous as human beings in terms of our choices. They're not sufficiently determined by anything, including God himself. And so in that sense, our choices are free and they're indeterministic, some people will say. But furthermore, that means that you could have always chosen differently in the same set of circumstances. So you have same set of circumstances up to the time and point of choosing, and you could equally choose A or not A in those same set of circumstances at that same point. And nothing sufficiently determines whether you would choose A or not A. And so this is what free will theists define as free will. And so what that means for what's called the free will defense is that God, free will theists will say that God granted human beings this ability to have this kind of free will. And God doesn't interfere with that free will because it's necessary in order to maintain what they believe to be moral responsibility. Without free will, you cannot be morally responsible for your choices. They also would say that this kind of free will is necessary for loving relationships. And furthermore, it guards God against being the author of evil. It guards God against being morally responsible for evil. So the opposite view, of course, would be that God in his sovereignty determines the whole course of history. And so the free will theist says, well, if you believe that, then that means God has to then be morally responsible for evil in the world. So the free will defense basically says, if free will is true, and they believe it is, and if God does not interfere with the choices of human beings, and yet this is a valuable thing to have in order to preserve moral responsibility and to preserve, for example, loving relationships, they would say, you know, we can't truly love God unless we are free to love God, and vice versa. God must be free in his love toward us. And so there's this sort of free exchange where no strings tied, you know, to our choices. And that's the way they would argue. And that's a very valuable thing. However, it comes with a great risk.
Yeah, it almost, and so God, I mean,
yeah.
Not to interrupt you here, but so no strings are tied, and yet it seems like, and I'm sure this is where you're going, it ties a rope around God, right?
Yeah, yes. Yes, it makes God dependent on the choices of human beings. And so if God does not interfere with our choices, and he could, it's important to recognize that those who hold to this view, and typically it is connected with classical Arminianism, but other free will theists would include people like open theists, if your hearers know what I'm, you know, what that is, and another brand of theology called Molinism. There's some differences between those three basic brands of free will theism, but what is common to all of them is that they have the same definition of free will. And so the idea is that if God grants human beings this kind of free will, then God is taking a risk that people will use their choices to make bad choices. And so these evil choices is what generates evil in the world. And it's just part of the risk that God has to take in order to create a world where people have free will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so supposedly that position guards God against the charge that he would be the author of evil. And essentially God himself has no choice. If he's going to create a world where loving, you know, valuable relationships occur, those relationships presumably have to be based on this free will. You know, I have to, in order to really express love, I have to have the equal ability to say, you know, I don't want to love you. I'd rather hate you. And if I don't have that ability to make the choice between love or hate, then I'm not really free and I'm not really responsible. I'm just a robot. I'm just a programmed computer, you know, and I have no free will. Mm-hmm. And so that's the argument.
I think one of the best counter arguments, especially to that one, because I think that one's a very powerful argument against kind of against your position. But the best counter example is who God is, which is in a Trinity. Is Jesus, is the Holy Spirit, is the Father. Are they allowed not to love each other in the triune nature? And so If they don't have the so-called freedom to hate each other, is that true love? Well, we would say that in the existence of God before creation, he was in perfect unity. One of the positive qualities of Trinity as opposed to strict monotheism like Islam is that God kind of has to learn love in that capacity. And here, by having a triune nature with three persons, there is no learning love. He is loving towards the other members of the Trinity. And so does God have the ability to not love in that relationship? And I think that's one of the powerful counterexamples to your book on that point.
Yeah, exactly. God himself does not have this kind of freedom. And so this sort of freedom is necessary for loving relationships. Well, God himself doesn't have it because it's not even possible for God to express hate, right? That would be the capacity for sin existing within God. And there is no capacity for sin within God. And so the love that exists among the members of the Trinity, there can be no other possibility. There's no possibility of hatred among members of the Trinity. There is only the possibility of perfect, you know, unhindered love between the Father and the Son and the Spirit. And so so God doesn't have this kind of free will. And if God doesn't have that kind of free will, and it's not necessary for God to be morally responsible in his relationships with each other or with us, then why is it necessary for us to have that? Yeah. And so that's one of the arguments against free will.
Right.